The last thing I do, every day, before I leave the house, is check to make sure that my fangs are retracted. Not literally. I'm not a vampire. I'm actually a morning person. I've noticed, though, from reading people's reactions, that my smile can get a little feral if I'm not careful. Tyra Banks' America's Next Top Model reality show changed my life because this powerful, successful supermodel taught me that it's okay to need to practice one smile. She does it professionally, after all, so if she needs to practice, who doesn't? Her words make sense. We have to learn what a good smile feels like in our faces so we can do it without looking. After all, we can't see ourselves when we're out in the world. At least, those of us who aren't walking around with a phone camera at the end of a selfie stick can't. Even at my ballet studio, Madame Ginevra would periodically make us practice facing away from the mirrors so we wouldn't start banging into each other in performance. We'd use the mirrors to cheat our spacing, she pointed out. We needed to learn to watch each other out of the corner of our eyes. We needed to learn to trust the music and each other. The consequences of that first mirrorless practice were always a little grim. There were stubbed toes, fixed smiles, and sometimes shouting in tears. Eventually we'd get it together for the performance, but somehow the memory of the chaos and grumpiness it took to get there lessened a little of the fun in having the audience cheer for us after the real thing. It felt like they were applauding a cover-up. Yay, we'd all successfully pretended that we hadn't been yelling and crying at each other 2 months before. No one had screwed up, so we could all walk away with our heads high. Ballet performance. Got to be a shameless egoist to love it, I suppose. Not having nerve endings in your feet could also help, assuming you want to get into point. I have nerve endings in my feet, so I eventually quit. I think Madame Ginevra might have been a little glad to see me go. The students with that natural movement awareness, they're built for team sports. The ones who lack it, who have to work and earn that kinesthetic sense? Proprioception is the $10 word for what we have to develop. Oof, what a mouthful. It's not our fault, though. I can't develop good proprioception by myself. People literally can't entirely practice it on their own. Unless your ballet studio can afford tackle sleds like the football kids use, and it's just repetition and student-on-student violence. This means the less talented students can literally put the gifted ones in danger with their wobbly, off-center progressions. It's no fun to need to occupy a space that suddenly someone is unaccountably in. If you do think it's fun to narrowly miss each other while flying through the air, then you should try cheerleading, a different sport entirely. I actually did pick up a different sport. I took up singles tennis. I forced myself to focus and stop this rumination train from leaving the station. It's time for me to be present, right here, right now. Thanks to the professional permission of Tyra Banks, I installed the smizing mirror in my entryway for this exact purpose. Smizing, according to Miss Tyra, means smiling with one's eyes. The mystery of how to obtain this skill is only unlocked by brutal, uncritical repetition. It's not for the faint of heart, let me tell you. The mirror addresses two needs at once. I need to make sure my fangs are retracted. And I need to take a moment to be nice to myself every day. It's just science. Literally focusing on my face in the mirror for a moment while doing a lipstick on the teeth check as well as a jokey fang check requires my brain not to shy away from the reality of the present moment. To keep the moment from becoming negative reinforcement, I then require my mind to come up with at least one true nice thing to say about myself. If I didn't, then like narcissists, I could never bring myself to look in a mirror, for fear that I was no longer attractive. I won't let my mind work like that. I refuse. I have to be willing to lock eyes with myself in the mirror. I have to deal with myself right now, in this moment. I can't rely on how I used to look, or my hope for how I'll look in the future. I swear this exercise would kill a true narcissist. My theory is that narcissist died at his own reflecting pool. Because he was too scared to look away. He was nervous that if he looked away, then the next time he looked back at himself, he might have changed. And there's always the possibility that the reality of change might mean that, while he'd been beautiful and golden a moment ago, that might not be true when he looked back. If he looked away and then looked back, and then could no longer love himself because he was no longer beautiful enough to give pleasure? Well, then he was an affront and should be discarded by any right-thinking demigod for making their day worse. It's just good sense. Better to keep looking and appreciate what you have than risk it all and regret your decision later. It's better to make yourself your only audience than harm the world with an ugly face, the narcissist myth tells me. To avoid being mean to myself like narcissists, I've put a cute whiteboard above my smizing mirror. I like to write myself pep talks there. Sometimes it's a reality TV quote. "It's all happening" is a regular favorite. Sometimes my friends will scribble in jokes there or draw pictures on the mirror. Today, however, my routine is the ordinary one. I look in the mirror, I grin impishly at myself. I wrinkle my nose at my reflection and playfully snarl. Then I carefully, channeling Miss Tyra, back the feralness off, just ever so slightly. Enough to no longer say, "Yeah, I'll eat you for breakfast if you stand in my way for too long. Your choice." Enough to be pleasantly curious, teasing enough that people will naturally try to impress me, but not actually dangerous. Implied danger is way sexier than real danger, no matter what Twilight taught me when I was young. My human smile is in place. My slightly too long incisors are safely tucked behind my berry-stained lips. I strut out the door into the sunny humidity of my Atlanta parking deck, and when I get into the car, I ritually check my smile again in my rearview mirror. Not feral. Very demure. A regular person might just use the front camera on their phone, but I've learned the hard way that I have to keep my personal phone at home. My work phone stays at work, unless I'm on the road. For work. That's how I maintain work-life balance and sanity in a world that doesn't entirely value either. I'm very big into getting along. It's part of why I care about my face. I noticed that I used to take the facial expressions of strangers personally. It's absurd, but also people can't help noticing. And since I like to be the change I want to see in the world, I practice what I preach. I put the work in to develop my facial awareness, like Miss Tyra taught. And practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. Imperfect practice just reinforces bad habits, Madame Genver used to say, disapprovingly, nearly every ballet class. So I have to practice in whatever reflective surfaces are around. I wish I didn't. It makes me feel like Narcissus or an anxious TikToker. I can't help it, though. It's just my face. I giggled the first time I saw a fanged fox girl in my friend's favorite Japanese anime. "It's me," I pointed out. Apparently, I'm represented accurately in Japanese culture. "You're a kitsune," my friend Alexis confirmed. "You're both weebs," my friend Grace told us. And we shrugged and laughed. Grace's family is originally from mainland China, and she can get a little culturally competitive about C-dramas versus anime versus K-dramas and whatever else. I'm just glad I'm a fast reader so I can enjoy subtitles. Dub set my teeth on edge. I suspect it's in part because of my job. I'm a casting agent, and I spend a big part of my day with my head down, looking at a desk and listening for authentic humanity in an actor's performance. We do this in-house now as a service to help clients functionally prep their audition tapes. I say tape, but it's mostly digital now. The point is, where actors used to have to come into a Los Angeles office space and sit in line for hours, now everyone gets to audition and review from the comfort of their own whatevers. This means that my casting agency office has a mini television studio just for creating these mini movies. There's a lighting crew, a sound crew, sometimes a dialect coach, and two other producers. One looks at the wide shot, while another watches the close-up monitor. My specialty is the voices. I've learned to help coach people through making the transition from real voice to reading voice to actor-character voice. I had to. While most of the actorly work to get this far happens in school, or by watching lots of content and homing natural instincts, or even by paying thousands of dollars for exclusive coaching workshops if they're Nepo babies. Even the most experienced actor can get nervous in front of a stone-faced group of listeners. If the audience isn't giving you energy back, you have to manufacture it all yourself. So I learned to do the actor's job, a little. That way, when they get in their own heads, I can remind them how to get out again. "Remember what you're trying to do here?" I tell Felicia. one of our agency's newest hires as we try to get her latest remote audition piece filled. Your character is trying to get Peter to give way. She literally has to get him to move. If she doesn't, they all die. Make him move. Convince him to move.
She nods.
Sounds, says the audio lady, letting us know she's ready.
Speed,
confirms the camera operator.
Action, I say mildly, and Felicia is off to the races. Her posture shifts. Her breathing quickens. Her need is written on her face and in her body, and that need is clear in her voice now. This time, she's remembered who the character is and why. Felicia no longer sounds like a stage actor trying to project to the back row of an auditorium. She's intense, connected, and determined. If I was Peter, I would get the hell out of Dodge and never look back. This is why I love my job. I didn't do the work, but I facilitated it. And millions of people get to look up on screen and see Felicia, committed and present, speaking her character's truth with ferocity and passion. I'm often a little part of that, and it makes me so proud. When the lead producer announces wrap on Felicia's session, I make my way back to my office. Somehow I've got one now, after years of working my way up, and I have to say, it feels amazing. Stellaris Casting Agency really supports its agents. I even have my own assistant, and as far as I can tell, it is Imani's actual job to make me feel professionally amazing. What more could I want in the world?
Morning, boss, Imani calls as I pass her desk. She quickly rises to intercept me with a steaming latte, fresh from our bajillion-dollar coffee machine.
You're in early. Feeling renewed after your mini-vacation?
Something like that, I reply, accepting the coffee gratefully.
What's our day look like?
Imani falls into step beside me, scrolling through her tablet. Davy Torres needs feedback on her casting choices for Midnight Crossing. The Sony people want to move Friday's meeting to Thursday. Oh, and Deshaun Breden's agent called 3 times yesterday. Apparently, Deshaun's desperate to read for the HBO Dad TV anthology.
Tell Deshaun's agent we'll see him at 2 as scheduled, I say wryly, unlocking my office. And please send Alicia's shortlist to email. I'll review it before our call. The morning passes in a productive blur. People ask me what my secret is sometimes, and it's literally just my old film set habit of leaving my phone in my desk whenever possible. Without my friend phone's infinite temptations, I power through emails, take 2 client calls, and draft a delightful pitch for a promising new director. The tiny but gnawing anxiety that plagued me since getting back from my long weekend gets flattened entirely beneath the familiar weight of work. At noon, Grace, who convinced me to sign on here, pokes her head in.
Lunch? That new pokey place opened downstairs.
Can't, I say sadly, gesturing to my cluttered desk. Too much catching up to do.
Grace studies me with narrowed eyes.
You seem different. More focused. Working with an old friend is fantastic in some ways, but secretly kind of annoying in others. She thinks she can read all my micro signals to tell what I'm feeling, and she's only mostly right about this.
Yep, I deflect. No one wants to hear about someone else's vacation.
Not really. That's what Instagram is for, to get the sharing inspo out of my system. If Grace really wants to know how I'm doing, she'll check the gram, just like always. After she flounces away in a mock pout, I lean back in my chair, put on the over-the-ear headphones that signal do not disturb to wary passers-by. My playlist is French jazz, no accordions for work, classical for sleep, and whatever the hell I want for everything else. The music drives me. By 3 o'clock, I've helped successfully negotiate a better billing for Alicia's first picture, impressed Deshaun Breden with my kind but candid feedback on his audition, and clear my entire inbox.
You're on fire today, Imani remarks, collecting tablets from my desk.
Whatever happened in New York, you should go there more often.
I smile noncommittally.
Just needed a reset, I guess. As 5 o'clock approaches, a curious sensation replaces my confidence. It's ambivalence, and I know where it's coming from. There's a small carton on my counter at home. It's currently unopened,
but like Pandora's box, that may ultimately be a good thing. Should I keep it closed for the world's sake? No. I may regret this later, but for now, I've determined that it's important for me to try new things. I'm keeping that promise to myself. Heading out? Amani asks, coat already on. In more ways than one, I say, letting my feral grin slip a little. Sometimes it's fun to be a little weird around my subordinates. It's literally the only flex I allow myself. I get to say what I want, and they get to figure out what I mean and what to do about it. I do not use this power cruelly. Following this impulse means no one ever tries too hard to get too close to me. Power politics are rife at other studios, and I refuse to let that happen in mine. It's bad enough that Grace and I are friends. If I socialize with anyone else, a duo turns into a clique. Brown nosers are everywhere, and I've been heartbroken more than once when a work friendship turns out to have been a work transactionship all along. Anyway, that's what the box is for. A new hobby. Advanced friendship is what I'm calling it. Well, for now. I'm workshopping it. I spend the drive home thinking up names for the carton. It sure beats thinking too much about why I bought its contents in the first place.